ವಿಜಯ್ ಸಾಯಿಟೆಡ್ ಎಸ್ಟರ್ಡೇ ಉದ್ಧರೇದ್ ಆತ್ಮನಾತ್ಮಾನಂ ಆತ್ಮಾನಂ ಅವಸಾದೇತ್ ಆತ್ಮೈವ ಹ್ಯಾತ್ಮನೋ ಬಂಧುರ ಆತ್ಮೈವ ರಿಪುರಾತ್ಮನಃ ಬಂಧುರಾತ್ಮಾತ್ಮನಸ್ತು ಸ್ಥಳೀನ ಆತ್ಮೈವ ಆತ್ಮನ ಜಿಧ ಅನಾತ್ಮನಸ್ತು ಶತ್ರುತ್ವೇ ವರ್ತೇದ ಆತ್ಮೇದು ಶತ್ರುವತಿ. ಸೊ ಆಲ್ ದ 45 minutes ಎಸ್ಟರ್ಡೇ ಐ ಸ್ಪೆಂಟ್ ಇನ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೇನಿಂಗ್ the hidden meaning of these two verses, the raising of oneself by oneself. We belong to two realms of being, the phenomenal and the noumenal, as philosophers generally would tell us. The phenomenality of our life consists in our limitation to the conditions of space, time and causation. We think of everything in terms of length, breadth and height. This is the quantitative assessment of the things of the world. Everything is a quantity. It has some substance and it is measurable in terms of length, breadth and height. This is one of the conditions to which our mind is subject. You cannot think of anything without attributing to it a quantity, some shape, which is a characteristic of our involvement in spatial characteristics. The mental involvement in space, whatever it be, compels us to think in terms of quantity, length, breadth and height. This is the specialty of space. We also attribute a quality to an object. It is not that a particular thing is only constituted of length, breadth and height. It has some quality, characteristic that determines its essentiality, individuality and distinguishes it from other things. If a particular object has no specific quality of its own, it cannot be distinguished from other objects. So the multiplicity of things that we perceive in the world is due to the characterization of things in terms of qualitative measurement. So one thing is quantity, another thing is quality. The third thing is relation. Everything is related to something else. We connect one thing with another. We compare one thing with another thing. Contrast one thing with another thing. This process takes place automatically in our mind without much of an effort. Every object has a mode or a condition of existence. It is in some situation, some context, some predicament. This is a philosophical finding, a way of analysis of experience by which we note that quantity, quality, relation and mode are inseparable from the object, whatever be that object. This conditioning of the mind is the phenomenality thereof. You are forced to think only in certain ways and you cannot think in any other manner. The compulsion of the mind to think in a particular manner divests it of real freedom. Why should you imagine that a thing will be only of this nature and it cannot be of any other nature? Apart from this fourfold characterization of an object, there is also a fluxation, a change, and a mutability that we attribute to things. Nothing exists in the same condition for a long time. There is, if you would like to put it so, an evolution of things. There is a transition involved in the very existence of things, and because they are characterized by transitional process, they cannot even be said to be existing truly speaking. A thing which changes its character is by the process of self-transformation or evolutionary process cannot be said to be existing, it is only moving. Many thinkers have opined that the world is a process rather than a thing. It is a movement rather than a substance. Everything changes. Nothing is static in this world. This is how we are forced to think in our minds. All is change and nothing is static. But the awareness that everything is changing cannot be associated with the process of change itself. Awareness cannot change. If the bed of the river moves with the same speed as the river, you can imagine what will happen to the river. The river moves with the speed because the bed itself does not move. Just imagine that the river bed also flows with the same speed as the fluctuation of the waters of the river. The consciousness of movement will not be there. Change implies the observation that change obtains in this world of phenomena, but the observation itself cannot be attributed to the process of changing. Change cannot know that it is changing. There should be a witness, an observer, in order that the change can become a content of the observation. You see a river that is flowing. If you also start flowing together with the speed of the water, you cannot know that there is a flow at all. You say a railway train is moving, but you also suppose are moving with the same speed along parallel lines, you will not know that the train is moving. So movement cannot know movement. A motionless staticity, something which is to be called permanent, has to be there in order that the evolutionary process of the world can be conceived. Change implies changelessness. The observation that all things are phenomenal is not an act of the phenomenal setup itself. Phenomenality cannot recognize itself as a phenomenal existence. There is a non-phenomenal reality which has to be accepted as an observing medium so that you can know that the world is phenomenal. Everything is passing away. The consciousness of death of everything is an interesting theme which is to be studied carefully. We do not like to hear the word death. It is something abominable you want to hear because of the association with this world of a negation of true being. Death is the negation of your existence. Now, is it possible to negate existence? In your studies that you have passed through during earlier days, you would have noticed that existence cannot be nullified. It would be a contradiction in terms to say that existence can be non-existent. Such a thing has no meaning. It is an absurd statement. There is something in us which defies the process of dying. If dying is itself our real nature, we would not be frightened about dying. Because nobody can be afraid of what is normal and natural. There is an admixture of the nominal and the phenomenal characteristics in our personality, due to which there is a fear of death. The phenomenal side tells us that nothing can be permanent. It has to pass away into something else. Everyone knows that no one can live eternally in this world. Knowing well that you cannot live long, why should there be a fear of death? Because it is an accepted fact that everything has to go. While the fact of everything going out of its present condition is accepted, still there is a fear that it should not take place. Knowing well that everyone has to die, one does not want to die. Here is a contradiction in our feeling. We are trying to negative a process which is inevitable and unavoidable. This contradiction arises on account of two factors involved in our own personal existence. There is a deathless nominality in us and also a dying phenomenality in us. That which is deathless in us, pure being, eternal in its nature, when it gets combined with the phenomenality of passing away, creates a feeling of discomfort, and it is explicable only because of an admixture of two factors which enter into our mind, and these two factors press us from two different directions, and a third peculiar situation of fear of death arises in our mind. Fear of death is actually a wish that death should not take place, while everyone knows that it will take place. The physical or psychophysical involvement of our personality is what is called the phenomenality of our life. But that which tells us that such a thing is not possible and it should not take place, a perpetuity is something that would be welcome, that feature in us is the timeless being which masquerades in this process of the world which is involved in time. Timeless thing, eternity as it is called, is hidden beneath the phenomenality of the temporal or time process. You may say God is immanent in this world in some such manner as this particular context or situation. eternity is making itself present in that which is not eternal, namely the time process. Our asking for endless things, and endless things for all time to come, which is a peculiar characteristic in our aspirations, is accounted for by our involvement in space on the one hand and in time on the other hand. We wish to defy time by our asking for deathlessness or a longest life which will never end. And we wish to defy the limitations of space by our longing for endless possessions. There are two great desires in the human being: endless expanse of the possession that one can have. You would like to rule the whole earth and entire skies if possible. And that power to rule the whole world and all that space should also be a perpetual blessing. Suppose you are the emperor of the whole world for 1 second, that would not be a satisfaction to you. It is only a 50% of the matter. The emperor of the world is in possession of the vastest comprehensiveness of objectivity. But temporality infests this possession and it kills the king. We neither wish to be finitely located to one little place with nothing to possess, but you would like to have all the world for our own selves. At the same time, we would like to have the whole world for ourselves for endless period of time. Here we are trying to overcome the limitations of space as well as time, an impossibility on the face of it. But our desires are really an asking for the impossible. Here is a continuation of what I told you yesterday, the necessity for self-control or self-restraint. All desires are an asking for the impossible, because perpetuity in time is not possible, because time is a process and not an existence. Endless, unlimited position also is unthinkable, because there is an end for everything. Modern science tells us that even space is limited, and it is not unlimited as it appears to our visual perception. All desires involve a self-contradiction in themselves, asking for that which they should not ask for. May I live long, forever and ever, as long as the sun and moon last, as long as the earth continues to exist. This will be our prayer, if it could have any meaning. Jivaima Sharadashatam, Prabhravama Sharadashatam. We pray every day in our Sandhyavandana process. Why is Sharadashatam? It may be thousands of years also. And you do not wish to be living for an endless period of time like a non-entity in this world. Would you like to live like a nobody? That is a vacuous type of existence. Your endless existence should be filled with an endless inclusiveness also, so that you have infinity and eternity as it were within yourself. Here we have an indication as to what we are really made of, potentially at least. Infinity and eternity are dancing within our own hearts, but unfortunately to the tune of the clamors of the sense organs, which tell us something quite contrary to the inner aspiration potentially felt in that manner. Self-restraint, self-control is therefore necessary in order that we may not live in a fool's paradise, where everything is apparently there, but nothing is really there. You cannot catch wind and bind it. You cannot live by holding a piece of straw in a flooded river, nor can you have a perpetual satisfaction in this world by catching hold of a moment of a fluxation which the universe is. Actually, we cannot even say that there is such a thing called moment. The moment also is a kind of three-dimensional conception that we introduce into the process of time. A process cannot be partitioned into bits. That is why we call it a process. It is a continuity and not a divisibility. Hence, neither you are asking for endless position in terms of having all the objects of the world, entire earth itself, nor your desire for endless living in time process are justifiable. And all desire is only this much. Hence it would mean that desires are unjustifiable movements of the mind. They are illogical phenomena. Unjustifiable, illogical, and infested with a kind of foolishness, you may say, from which we have to keep ourselves clean. In the Kathopanishad, there is an anomalous statement for us, which has two meanings, namely, paranchekani yatrana svayambhu tasmat parang pashyati nantaratma. When God created the world, it appears that He punished us at the same time with a tendency to look outward and never look in a universal fashion. Our consciousness is infected, punished as it were, with their impetuous tendency to see beyond itself, outside itself, and never look into its own self. Being becomes becoming when consciousness projects itself as a movement towards an object of sense. Being becoming becoming also is a contradiction. Param pasyati nantaratman. Nobody will know one's own self. Everybody knows everything about the stars in the sky. You can count how many stars are there, but you cannot count your thoughts, the number of your feelings inside. You can know many things in about this world, historically, geographically, and all that, but you can know nothing about your own self. Professors of knowledge are filled with information about everything in the world except about themselves. You may profess knowledge, but you cannot possess that knowledge which is actually required by you. This is the reason why it is said again and again that only a great spiritual hero will be able to understand what is actually happening to oneself. Kaschid dhira pratyeka atmanam aichat. A great hero only can understand what is actually happening within me. Avrata chakshu amrutattvam ichan means desiring immortality. A hero in the spiritual path only introverts his consciousness and sees what is happening inside. A big play or a game is being enacted in our own hearts, and you will find whatever is outside in the world is also potentially present in our own selves. It is the Chandogya Upanishad that tells us the entire space which is so big, all the stars, the clouds and the rain, the sun that shines and the moon, all are inside the heart of a person. And this little heart is as wide as the space outside. How is it possible? How a little heart that seems to be ours can contain a vast space and it shall be as big as this space? Really speaking, there is no bigness about space. It is not vast as it appears. It is a sensory illusion that is created by a peculiar operation that defies our understanding, as infinite distance can be seen to the right side as well as the right left side. If you keep two glasses on both sides, mirrors on both sides, and place yourself in the middle. You sit in one place and keep one mirror to the right and one mirror to the left. You will find yourself infinitely projected endlessly there, both sides. Distance which is not there can be seen there as if it is there. There is no depth in the mirror. It is a flat surface. But it can project a phenomenon of endless distance both ways. You can see it in museums. You have one in Paramarthanikethan. You can see that in Antari Saptasarovar. They have kept one image and two mirrors are placed on both sides, and like a Disneyland, they have kept mirrors on all sides so that you will not know where you are standing. You may hit your head against a mirror thinking that it is a passage, and so on and so forth. Such a confusion can arise on account of a misplacement of context in the perception of things. Really speaking, there is no depth in space. And there is no linear movement of time. They are illusions created by a peculiar kink in the operation of consciousness. As is the case in the dream world, for instance, the distance in spatial expanse in the dream world and the time process to which you are subject in the dream world are contained within the little waking consciousness into which whole world of dream will be absorbed when you wake up. You will be wondering how your little skull, the little movement of your mind inside the brain in the waking life could project a huge world of distance with time process and all the panorama of your waking life. The drama of consciousness is the real drama of life. Knowing all these things, we should not be entangled in attachments of any kind, because all attachments, all desires are something like desires that a dreaming individual may evince in terms of objects that are visualized in dreams. They are inside the waking consciousness only. They are not sitting there outside as they appear. Yet the mind runs outside, as if they are outside. Similarly, the case with this waking world. There is a cosmical structure of an integrated type. An organic being is finally there, which somehow or other kicked us off. We have separated ourselves from this organic structure of the universe. And we behold it as if we are an observer of this world of which we are really a part. This is the fall of man, as they call it in the scriptures. The fall of man is the isolation of the part from the whole. And if the part which is integrally connected with the whole appears to stand outside the whole and beholds the whole as an object of itself, what will it see except a topsy-turvy illusion, a delirious perception? Therefore, all attractions and beauties of life, all things in the world which appear to be desirable, are concoctions, a peculiar, erroneous evaluation of our consciousness, which has become topsy-turvy in its observations. The external looking like the internal, and the internal looking like the external. Knowing this situation, it is up to the seeker of truth to absolve oneself from these tricky operations of consciousness, which has wrongly visualized itself as isolated from the whole to which it belongs. The cosmos is one integrated completeness. We are not merely inside it, we are inseparable from it. The hands and the feet are not inside the body. They are not also outside the body. They are the body. In a similar manner, you can imagine that you are not outside the world, nor also are you inside the world. You are the world. If that is the case, what are you looking at with your open eyes? You can imagine the error of sensory perception. A deep analysis here is called for in the interest of any spiritual seeker. You will find that this is a hard task, because the habit of consciousness to look outward and placing itself in the limited context of an observer of the world, this habit is so strong. Indriyani Pramathini, I mentioned to you yesterday. Tortuous, impetuous, gale-like force these sense organs have, which are nothing but the avenues of the gushing of consciousness in an externalized fashion through an imagined space-time complex. A spiritual seeker, therefore, is perpetually vigilant. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, the great saint, had analogies, illustrations and examples to make complicated things very clear. He has, in one of his statements, an interesting thing to tell you, how you have to be cautious and never be wool-gathering. Suppose it is heavily rainy, cats and dogs, and it is middle night. You do not know what to do. You find a little shelter, a little hut, a thatched hut. You sit there just to have a little respite from the pouring of rain outside, and it is dark also. In a little twilight of the stars on the sky, you find there where you are sitting, from a little hole, a snake is crawling and showing his head like this. You look the other side, there another snake is there. And backside you see some scorpion in it. Everywhere you find little creatures coming, dreaded things, showing their heads, and you are sitting there because you can't go out, it is heavily raining. Will you sleep? Because you are tired. Whole night you will be looking like this, from in 10 directions, what is happening, where what is. What happened to your sleep and the fatigue? And your wish to sleep, it has gone because of the fear of what is there around you. You can give several examples of this kind, where it is possible for you to get highly concentrated on a thing and never forget a thing. You may say, the mind is very mischievous, the senses are strong, desires are powerful, I am unable to concentrate my mind. These arguments arise on account of your lukewarm affection for the ideal that you are actually choosing. You are traveling and walking on the road. Thousands of people also are moving. Vehicles are making noise, horning, and all kinds of noise and different types of people pushing you, elbowing you from different sides, and you are carrying a large fortune in your pocket. You can never forget that the fortune is in your pocket. You may be tired, you may be thirsty, you have not eaten for several days, you would like to rest, all that is wonderful, but that fortune which is your very life as it were, which is in your pocket, will not permit you to think anything else except that. The value that you see in a thing will enable you to concentrate on it. Perhaps we cannot see enough value in living a spiritual life. There are so many mistakes that we commit in the very thought of what a spiritual life is. Often we think it is an otherworldly life. It is a movement towards a reality that is not in this world. It is far away from us. God is not in this world. I have to die here in order that I may reach the absolute, which is above this world. The transcendent character of the world, of felicity, God above the heaven. These ideas arise in us because of the limitations to which the sense organs are subject by the operation of space, time and cause. God is not transcendent. He is neither outside nor inside, nor you can say that He is everywhere. All these ideas arise on account of definitions that we attribute to Him in terms of space, time and causation. Neither is He inside, nor is He outside, nor is He above. Where is He? It is an indeterminate being as such, which is your potential being also. It is only here that you have the possibility of being immortal, deathless. Everything else will die and pass away. If you know the value of attaining God, you will think nothing else in your mind. But we don't believe that there is so much of value as scriptures say, or saints and sages say, because there is some value in this world also. Who can say that the world is valueless? This pull from the world which is apparently full of value contaminates your love for God, who is apparently transcendent to your sensory perception. Even the concept of God is vitiated by the involvement of mind in space, time and cause. That is why you find even a few minutes of meditation is very difficult. Neither you can do japa, nor chant the name of God, study, svadhyaya, concentrate. Nothing is possible, because this world which is working havoc in terms of our vicious activity of the sense organs, prevents us from knowing the true nominal indivisibility of being, independent of, completely free from the phenomenal texture of our temporal personality. Lot of time is to be devoted for this purpose. It is not a question of few minutes of scratching your head. Spiritual life is a whole time occupation. You live for it and you die for it. Spiritual life is not one kind of activity in which you are getting involved among other activities. I have to go to the factory, I have to go to the shop, I have to maintain a family, and I have to do meditation also. So you consider meditation on God as one among the many other activities of life, not knowing that it is not an activity at all. It is an inwardness of your being to which you enter, and it comprehends all other things in your enumeration, the factory going, working, amassing wealth, and all other things are included within this. The indivisible being, which is the God whom you are aspiring for in your meditations, is inclusive of all things. The mind will not accept this truth. It will say it is not so. The world is there. It is beautiful. And it can give us a lot of satisfaction. Who can say it is not? Do you think that this world is a hell? It is like a heaven. I can get whatever I want from this world. The mind says this, and it gives a little corner for the seat of God in the limbo of our existence, and finally you will find that God is completely excommunicated from this world. The world kicks God outside. As in Aesop's fable, you find the story that the camel kicked the Arab out of the tent. This is what is happening to poor God. We have given him a little niche of our life, grudgingly. We have no time for him. But we don't understand all time is included in him. Why do you want time for thinking God? Because it is timeless existence. Do you want time to think God? It is pure being as such. It is your existence. Do you want time to exist? How much time do you want to exist? It is a meaningless question. Existence does not require a time. If that is the case, the thought of God, meditation on God, or the absorption of your consciousness in God does not require time, because it is a timeless operation of your consciousness. Knowing all this, withdraw your sense organs. Never be slave to the temptations of senses. And do not play second fiddle to the mind, which is just dancing in the tune of the sense organs. Be under a guidance of a good teacher, a master, a guide, because however much you may hear, your mind will not retain all these things in your mind. When you go out, 90% of it goes in. Nothing will be, whole thing washed off, because the mind is powerful. Repeated study, continuous swadhyaya, satsanga with saints and sages, guru padesha, and honest search for God, and real wanting it. Real wanting is a word to be underlined. If you really want it, it has to come. As it is well said by the great master, ask and it shall be given. If you ask it, it shall be given. If you don't ask, it will be a mistake. So be happy. God bless you. Hari Om Tat Sat.